Mitzvah Kuf Samech Aleph, the 161st mitzvah, Mitzvas Inyan Tumas Nevela, the ritual impurity of a dead animal. Lios HaNevela Temeha Umetama, that a dead animal should be impure and also give over ritual impurity, convey impurity. Shenemar V'chi Amus Min HaBeima Asher Hi Lachem Lachla, that when an animal dies that can be, that you can eat, so it is a Nevela, And it is a tamei. Chasav Rambam zechon levracha. The Rambam says mitzvah hazos is elashono. The Rambam writes vani azkirlach hinei ata hakdama. This is my introduction to this mitzvah. Yuslach shatizkira bechol mashaniskar minei hatuma. So you have to remember this rule when we all discuss all the mitzvahs that have to do with ritual impurity. Kol min min mehatumos mitzvah sasei. The fact that we count each mitzvah that discusses ritual purity, impurity as a separate commandment, and who disagrees with this as we discussed before? The Ramban. Yes, the Ramban disagrees with the Rambam about this matter, but the Rambam is explaining his position that every tumah is counted as a separate mitzvah. So you can say, Rambam, what are you talking about? You count each ritual purity, impurity as a mitzvah sasei, a positive commandment? You're saying that you are commanded to defile yourself with this ritual form of impurity. It's mitzvah zaseh, a positive commandment. How does that make any sense, Rambam?
To refrain from.
Okay, we'll get to that in a second. So we don't have to become tameh with this tumah. If that were the case, then it would be a mitzvah lo saseh. How can you count it as a mitzvah zaseh? We're not commanded either to become impure or not to become impure. It's just if you touch it, you become impure. It's just an automatic result. So that counts as a mitzvah to say. Bulam heyosa Torah omeres shemishikara beze hamin nitma o ze hadavar yitma alinyan kach lemi shikara velav. So who mitzvah to say? So the mitzvah to say is not that we have to do it or we can't or we're not allowed to do it, but rather it's simply that it is. That's a unique form of mitzvah to say that's just telling you facts, as opposed to an actual obligation to do something. Not this mitzvah to say, to purify yourself for eating korbanos is something that applies only when the basic mikdash is in existence. But the fact that these things cause tumah is still applicable nowadays. Yeah, if you touch a dead animal, so you become tameh. I mean, you're already tameh.
So what's the big deal? So you become tameh. I mean,
nowadays there's no big deal. You're right. Exactly. Yeah, 100% right. If you accidentally pick up a like a piece of meat, like we were discussing before, at the grocery store, cockroach is not a nevela. No, we'll get to that in a second.
Dead cat.
But if you okay, so
no, I know people who are very.
Yeah, that also would be that's correct.
That's not a nevela. You can't eat that.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. Hold on. You people are so excited, which is beautiful, about learning about Tumah Vitara, but. So it's telling you that the mitzvah say is that this person should become tame when he or she comes into contact with this object. The mitzvah is to be act in accordance with this status of ritual purity and impurity. Okay. So this is how you become tame. And if you don't come into contact with any of these things, you don't become tame. Ba'atzmo harishus biyad kol adam. So if you, the choice as to whether to become pure or impure is up to you. Ki im ratza yitma, v'im ratza lo yitma. You don't have to touch a dead animal, but if you want to, you may touch a dead animal. If you want to bury your cat or your cow or whatever, so you have a pet cow, okay. So if it dies and if you want to bury it. Lashon sifra, the halachic medrash and sefer vekra says, "Uvniv lasam lo sigo, you shall not touch their dead bodies." Yachol im naga adam beniv lasam yilka arboim. So from this pasuk where it says, "Do not touch their dead their corpses," then you might think that it's a negative commandment. It's a lav that if you touch a dead the dead body of an animal, then you receive lashes, 40 lashes. Tamalomar elati tamo. So to balance off this pasuk, which seems to imply that you're not allowed, it says that you shall become impure when you touch these things. So it seems to be that that it's not an absolute prohibition. But wait, if you had that verse only, the one that says, so then you might think, well, Yeah, it's an obligation. Whenever you see a dead cow, you must run over and touch it immediately. Since you have these two opposing psukim, that you have one that says lo sitamu, that you shouldn't touch their bodies, and another one says that you will become impure if you touch these. So since you have these two statements sort of canceling each other out, so that implies that the conclusion is that it's voluntary. It's voluntary. You may become impure, or if you don't want to, you don't have to become impure. But if you do, so you will become impure. The mitzvah is to follow the halachos associated with these laws. That anybody who touches this should become impure, the same as any other type of ritual impurity. You can't go into the Beis HaMikdash, and you can't touch korbanos, and all these types of things, the types of behaviors associated with somebody who's tummy, you're not allowed to do. That is true, that is an absolute prohibition. But to put yourself in that status in the first place is neither obligatory nor prohibited. Vezosia mitzvah kolomar yosetome bezehamin shikar avelav o kishehaya etzlo al inyan kach. That the mitzvah is that you to become tamei and treat yourself as tamei when this happens. So it says, I don't have to want to repeat this by every single commandment that discusses tuma b'tara, so keep this in mind so I don't have to repeat myself, starting to sound a little bit like the Sefer HaChinuch. Ve'im kol zeh lo yisyashiv yofim halev. The Sefer HaChinuch says, this lengthy explanation and justification of his views by the Rambam is nice. However, it's not satisfying. Misyashiv al halev is it literally means to be situated well on the heart, but it's the Hebrew idiom for it's not a satisfying explanation. It's not intellectually satisfying. Shenachshov inyan ze mitzvah. It still doesn't really make sense that it should be a mitzvah saseh, a positive commandment to treat oneself as tamei when coming into contact with these things. Doesn't make too much sense. Even so, he prefers the opinion of the Ramban, who says that not each thing, each tumah is its own mitzvah, but rather the mitzvahs in general that those don't count at all. Those are not mitzvahs. Those are simply details. When the Torah says that you may not eat korban when you're tamei, so we have to know what constitutes tamei. So the Torah tells all the details, but it's not mitzvahs unto themselves per se. It's not counted one of the 613. It's merely details of how to perform other mitzvahs. So he prefers the Ramban, he thinks it makes more sense. But in counting the mitzvos, we follow the Rambam because he's the most structured and organized. The Ashorish Kasuv Lamala, that the reasoning is like the other Tumah V'Tara, to keep us away from things that are potentially spiritually or physically damaging. B'dinei HaMitzvah, the halachas are as follows, Masha Amru Zichrono Livracha, that the sages tell us, a nevela av me avos hatuma, that a nevela is considered an av hatuma, it can convey ritual impurity to humans, vessels, foods, and beverages. That's an av hatuma, as opposed to a vlad hatuma, which can only convey tuma to foods and beverages. The chazay is mibisara, and the minimal shear is an olive's bulk. Metami adam v'kelim b'maga uchlicheres ba'avir. So it's telling you that it can convey ritual impurity to people and vessels, which is the sole providence of an av hatuma. An av hatuma, like I said, it's a vlad hatuma, something that has been contaminated by an av hatuma, can only convey ritual purity and impurity to foods and beverages. So by touching, so for people and most vessels, it's by touching. Uchli cheres ba'avir. We have a special halacha by earthenware vessels, where if you touch it, if something, if tummy touches the side of the earthenware vessel, it does not become tummy. No, it does not become tummy at all. How does an earthenware vessel become tummy?
If something falls into it.
Yes, if it goes into the airspace of the vessel.
What does that mean, the airspace?
Like if I have, let's say this is an earthenware vessel, and I'm tamei for some reason. I'm an av hatuma.
Or you're a bug.
Or a bug. And I go like that. So then that's...
In the airspace.
in the airspace.
The cavity.
As opposed to this. This, if I go like this, uh-huh. That doesn't make it, Tommy. That's an earthware vessel. Uh-huh. So, but anyway, so that's the special halacha by an earthenware vessel. And it has a special halacha which we haven't really seen before, which is that if a person touches it, then only the person becomes tamei. But if a person carries the nevela, which we haven't seen before, we've only seen that that ritual purity and impurity can be conveyed by a direct contact, or in a kli cheres if it's in the middle. But there's a new category over here, which is tumas masa, that it can be, that tumah is conveyed, even if you don't touch it at all, by carrying. So, for example, let's say there's a olive's bulk of nevela in this bottle. So if I go like this, I do not become tamei because I didn't touch it. Because I only touched there's something intervening between this and the, or if you go to the store and you go to Key Food and you go to accidentally go to the meat the display case on the right side instead of the left side, then you touch the plastic wrap that's wrapping a piece of steak that they have there, then you would not become tamei. But if you say, oh, that looks like a delicious steak, I think I'm going to buy it, then you pick it up, and then you realize it's not kosher, then you, even though you didn't actually touch it, that's called tumas masa, since you carried it, that makes you tamei. Again, it doesn't really make a difference if you go to the wrong display case in Kifu nowadays, because if you become tamei by nevela, so it doesn't really matter, but that is the, in fact, the halacha. For this, shower. For everything but... No. There's no shower is nothing. Every tumah v'tahara, you have to go to the mikveh. Uh-huh. Yeah, so that's true. And right, it's not like a dead body is the only... Contact with a dead body is the only type of tumah v'tahara, tumah, that requires something more than going to the mikveh. I mean, many types of tumah v'tahara, you have to go to the mikveh, then wait for the following sunset or nightfall. Mm-hmm. So that is, but no actions are required more than going to mikvah for most types of tumah v'tahara. It's only a dead body that you also require the sprinkling of the para aduma. So that's another thing, that when it conveys the tumah by masa as opposed to by maga, by touching, so not only do you become tamei, but your clothes that you happen to be wearing become tamei as well, and the clothes as well must be immersed in a mikvah.
Really?
Yeah. Or you could... do two at once, and you could go to the mikvah in your clothes.
Yeah.
If they're loose enough. Yeah, there is... ideally, when people immerse themselves, they're not supposed to be wearing any clothes, so there shouldn't be any shaila about something coming between themselves and the water. But if they do go in wearing clothes, and the clothes aren't mamish skin tight, that prevents the water from coming into contact with their skin, then the tefillah is acceptable. So this is a case where the clothes are loose enough, so she's even allowed to do that lechatchila, because she wants to make the clothes tahor. And the clothes are loose enough, so there's really no... I mean, it's a discussion exactly how loose and exactly how lechatchila the situation is, but it's not so bad. Again, that's why they instituted this thing they were suggesting when they had the Freundel scandal. So they were trying to...
Barry Freundel.
So they were trying to discuss how to change the procedures for women's gerus. And you have to have a Beis Din present to observe the tefillah. So one of the suggestions that people gave is that instead of the woman immersing herself completely in the nude, she should be wearing a loose robe, which would certainly not be, at least b'dieved, which would certainly be up for a completely kosher tefillah.
I thought that there's like a sheet, that her head sticks out of or something like that. You know,
that was also one suggestion, that to put a sheet on top of the mikvah and then have her head sticking out. The robe is probably better, because the sheet... something could happen. She goes under and she doesn't find the hole again. Then she could be, again. Yeah. All right. Yeah, so probably the loose robe is better. So some people suggested that that should be the main tefillah. But then, just in case, after the men leave the room, she should go again with just the mikvah lady there with nothing. But there's not really any halachic reason to do that, because, as I said, with a loose robe, it's really a completely kosher tefillah. There's a specific reason to do it, even though normally we don't really like people to go to the mikveh with any clothes on. If there's a specific reason to do it over here, because it's important takana to make for the whole system. So sometimes things that are acceptable, some people consider acceptable, like b'dieved, become acceptable lechatchila. As I said, even once she did it, there's no shaila about the immersion. Wow. It's a completely kosher.
Actually, these depend on the veteran to say that she's submerged or not.
No. No, when a woman converts, the Beis Din of three men has to watch her head go under the water. Well, normally they don't, the room is constructed in such a way that they're not, in other words, they can stand at the doorway or something. So she goes into the water up to her neck or whatever. So then the men are just can only see, they can't see below the neck. They're constructed in a way where they only see her head and the surface of the water, and then they see the head go under the
surface.
Yeah, but they're at an angle where they can only see her.
And also the level of the water.
If they're standing right next to the pool, that's
the
a problem.
Water a little bit.
No, you can. What do you mean? That water is clear no matter how much you agitate it. Anyway, it's supposed to be done in a way where the men cannot see anything below the neck, but just for extra precautions because of reading things happen and women are more nervous about these things. That's why some people have suggested the idea of the loose robe for women who are converting. But like I said, if it's done properly, it shouldn't even be an issue because all they can see is the head. Ve'achad behema v'chaya hamutaros o ha'asuros shemesu. So it has to be a behema or chaya, a domesticated or an undomesticated animal. So a cat would fall under this category. That is something that's, it doesn't have to be a kosher animal. But it cannot be a bug, as a bug falls under this own category. As we said, that the only things that are tummy by shrutzim are the eight types of shrutzim that we discussed a few mitzvos ago.
But
and,
if we don't know, really, do we know?
Oh, the exact identity of the eight types of shrutzim? No, I can ask Rabbi Slifkin. I don't know, maybe in his new book he probably discusses it, yeah?
Does it matter if animals...
Kulan besaram mitami b'chazai. So an olive's bulk of their flesh, once they're dead, will convey Tumas Nevela Ushritas Behema Bachaya Tahora Mitaheris Osan Beinon Mitamos Acharkin. So we have a way out over here because if you shecht a kosher animal, it is not a nevela. Obviously it's a shchuta.
A what?
A shchuta, a slaughtered animal. Slaughtering is not shayach. Shchita is not shayach to a non-kosher animal, because you can't eat it anyway. So it has to be an animal that's relevant to the whole idea of shechita, and that is a kosher animal. So if an animal is slaughtered, with a kosher method of slaughter, then it will not be an avela, and it will remain tahor. So if you go to the left side of the meat display case at Kifud, then you can touch it however much you want, even if you're about to go into the Beis HaMikdash, and that will be completely fine. We'll get to that in 1 second, yeah?
What if the shechted and found to be a treifa?
Ah, so if it was shechted and found to be a treifa, it's tahor, because a treifa does not... treifa and nevela are not the same thing. Treifa is a side defect. Zeferkinov is going to say that in a few seconds, but that is true. One of the suggestions is if you have an animal that you know to be a treifa while it's still alive already, and you don't want it to become tamei, so then you can shecht it with a kosher shechita, and it will not become tamei. You still won't be allowed to eat it, because it has one of the defects that renders it a treifa, but at least it won't be tamei. So that's one suggestion that's found all over in Chazal, that if you have a treifa animal that you know to be a treifa, so you shecht it before it dies by itself, so it will not become a nevela.
So you have an ox in your field.
Yeah.
And it keels over, it's still alive, but it's clearly a lot of distress.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a window of opportunity to shecht it.
Correct.
So that you can actually, and if it's and theoretically, I don't know if you would want to do it in these circumstances, but if it does not have any
obvious signs of
treifus, you know, then you could actually use the meat.
That is correct, although there is a concept called the behema misukenis, that an animal that is on its way out, so to speak. It lasts like that. So there is Yechezkel HaNavi, the prophet Ezekiel, says at one point, I believe, nevelo treifa lo achalti or something. They didn't eat a nevela or a treifa, so the Gemara says... Well, that's obvious. Of course, he didn't eat a nevela or a treifa because they're not kosher anyway. Mm-hmm. So the Gemara says that what the Yechezkel HaNavi really meant to say is that he had an added stringency on himself, that he did not eat an animal that was dangerously close to death. And people were already starting to say, oh my gosh, we better shecht it before it becomes a nevela and becomes tamei. So there is a midas chasidus, a pious practice not to eat the meat of such an animal that was only shechted to prevent it from dying in any day now, but according to this basic halacha, that is true. That would be kosher to eat that animal, yeah.
How did you know it was
actually when the mad cow disease was around, people actually started, you know, people that thought they'd try to eat kosher meat because the practice seems to be that I forget the term for it, but an animal that looks like it's stumbling or something like that is excluded from the, you know.
Yeah, we try to shecht healthy animals, yeah, because they're more likely not to be treifus, more likely not to fall into this category. As I said, it's not real halacha. There are lots of midas chasidus, pious practices regarding kosher slaughter, which are not necessarily the basic halacha. There's another one, which is that it's considered to be, another one based this derived from Yechezkel Hanavi, which is that he didn't eat from what's called the behema shehora b'chacham, a behema that had permission whose in order to be to permit it for consumption, a shaila needed to be asked. So what does that mean? It doesn't mean that I slaughter an animal. I'm just a shochet. I don't know all the halachos of treifos, so I slaughter the animal. I look inside a little bit. I find something that looks to me like it might be a treifa, but I don't know. So I go to the rabbi, and the rabbi says, no, that's not a treifa. He opens up the Shulchan Aruch, and he says, no, you see here it says it's not a treifa. So that's not a behema shehora b'chacham. Just because you don't know the halacha, and somebody else told you what the halacha was, that's not a behema shehora b'chacham. A behema shehora b'chacham means that he had to write a tshuva to permit it. He had to go with analysis and try to prove, you know, why, if it's not explicit in the halachic sources, he had to come up with a new idea and try to prove why it should be kosher. Even if maybe that is, it doesn't mean it's not true. Of course, it could be, it very well is true. But if there was any, what we call shikul hadas, as opposed to something that the rabbi had to use logic to try to permit it, as opposed to just finding the halacha explicitly in the classical sources, that's called behema shehora b'chacham. I heard a story about the Chofetz Chaim that at one point during the Chofetz Chaim had a few bacharim from the Rad and Yeshiva. Maybe this was for at his house for a Shabbos meal. And it's probably, he was between wives, I think. So he had a lady there who was cooking for him. Was taking care of his household while he was between wives. So he had these bacharim over. So this lady served the soup. So the Bachrim are eating the soup, and the Chofetz Chaim didn't touch his soup. So he said to the lady, is the chicken in the soup kosher? So she thought she didn't hear him right. So she's like, what? She sort of ignored the question. So the Bachrim what? We're in the Chofetz Chaim's house. Like, we're pretty sure the soup is kosher. So they keep eating the soup. Whatever, the Chofetz Chaim didn't touch his soup. So then she brought out the next course. And it's a little bit of chicken, whatever else. And the same idea, same thing. The Bachrim start eating. The Chofetz Chaim didn't touch his food. She says to the lady, is the chicken kosher? So she says, she ignores it again. Finally asks again, can you please tell me if the chicken is, if this chicken is kosher? So she said, what are you talking about? And then she says, oh my gosh, I just realized what the problem was. Because the Chofetz Chaim, when he was instructing her on what the practices that he wanted in his house, so he told her that, you know, if you buy a chicken, you go to take the chicken back from the shochet, and you find any shayla in it, you know, I don't want to eat it. So just please don't serve it to me. So she says, she just remembered that she found a shayla. She went to the local rabbi. The Chofetz Chaim wasn't the rabbi of the town. She went to the local rabbi. The rabbi looked at it a while. He decided eventually it was okay. So, and so she served it. But then she remembered only after that she wasn't supposed to, serve him chicken about which there was any shayla.
And he knew by Nevi'ah.
Exactly, yeah. He had Ruach HaKodesh, so he didn't need it. So he was not this personal standards.
This is one of those anecdotal.
Yes. No, because it was kosher. The rabbi said it was kosher. But he personally didn't want to eat it.
No, he didn't want to eat it because it was a shayla.
No, I get it. It's
yeah. Why did he say, is the chicken kosher, to freak out the Bachram? That's probably a story is not... it doesn't mean the story is word for word literally true. Anyway, that's a story...
It sounds possible. It might be
good. Okay, I'm just heard. I heard the story. Take it or leave it.
He just got a vibe.
Yeah, he got a vibe from the chicken. There's another principle called... this doesn't necessarily apply in this case, but there's a principle called... Behemtan shel tzadikim ena kadosh baruch hu maybe takol al yadam tzadikim atzman lo kol shigen. So the Gemara says in Chulin, it has a story about the donkey of Rav Pinchas ben Yair who refused to eat demai, doubtfully tied produce. Then it talks about
doubtfully tied produce.
Yeah, there was a shaila about whether the trumas demais were taken out. So it refused to eat doubtfully tithe produce, the donkey. So then there's another thing about...
Do they use the donkey to Paskin Shilas?
So then Reb Pinchas, something about Reb Pinchas Ben Yor himself eating something. So then the Gemara says, God doesn't even allow bad things to happen through the animals that belong to tzaddikim, so certainly through to the tzaddikim themselves. So in some ways it's viewed as like, as opposed to other sins, that the eating of forbidden foods is particularly... abhorrent for a tzaddik, so therefore God will not allow them to stumble with the right.
So that's why, you know, we don't filter the New York City tap water, because, you know, Moshe Feinstein and Rav Kanetsky and
right. So all these gedolim drank the New York City water. All right, we'll get to the New York City water a little while in when we talk about shrutz. But that's that argument was suggested by some that New York City water must be kosher because all these tzaddikim drank it.
Gallons of shrutz and all.
Right. So, the two arguments against that, one which is more intellectually honest than the other, the first argument is that how do you know that the cups of water that they drank contained shrutzim? Maybe you don't know for sure that they could, that mm-hmm. the water that they drank contained bugs. Maybe their batches didn't have bugs. That's the one. That's argument number one. Argument number two, argument number two is if you have no idea what's going on, and you have no way, nobody in the world knows what's going on over here, so that's not even subject to this principle of Behemten Shel Tzadikim, because it's not an Avera at all. It's not even like they could have found out. Nobody at the time knew that the New York City water had bugs in it. So since they was totally without knowledge, so that's an even lower level of sin. That doesn't even rise to the level of a sin. So that's the second argument against why you can use that as a proof for the fact that you don't need to filter New York City water. Of course, the third option is, that is a proof. You don't need to filter New York City water. But we'll get to the details of that when we discuss that mitzvah in a few minutes. I mean, not a few minutes, probably next time. So, Vafilu shchitas chulin ba'azara v'kodshim b'chutz mitaheres osan midei nevela. So even if the shchita is a prohibited type of shchita, so for example, you slaughter regular meat, the not sacrificial meat, in the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, which is prohibited, so even so, it will still cause it not to become tame, because it will not be a nevela. As long as it had a kosher shchita, no matter when, where, how, then it is kosher. I mean, not kosher, but it won't be tummy. As long as its neck was cut with a nick-free knife in the proper manner. The cholsha mesa me'eleha, but if it died by itself, osha era psul bishchita saharehi nevela. So not only if it just simply died by itself, but if there was, let's say, somebody tried to administer a proper slaughter, but it didn't quite work out. And the Torah tells us, zavachta kasher tzivisicha, that the... Torah, that it's an oral tradition. You shall slaughter as I commanded you, but it doesn't say explicitly in the Torah any place what the laws of slaughter are. So it's an oral tradition exactly how slaughter, kosher slaughter is performed. And there are five things, everybody who's learning to become a shochet needs to learn the five things that cause a shechita to become pusel. And of course, everyone knows you have the main idea of the shechita is you have to use a knife that's completely nick-free, it's completely sharp and smooth blade, and it has to be done on the neck in a back and forth motion. So what's some more details about that? One of the psulim of shechita is called shehiya, that if there's any pause during the shechita, then that renders the shechita unacceptable. And according to the strict halacha by the Gemara, there are slight pauses that are allowed, but according to our minhag nowadays, we do not allow any pause at all during a shechita. Drasa is the second category, which means that instead of moving the knife in a back and forth motion, you just press down with the knife to chop the head off, basically. That makes a shechita invalid. Obviously, you have to press down a little bit, otherwise you're not going to get anywhere with the knife, but the pressing down has to be while you're sliding the knife across the neck of the animal at the same time.
Right, so you just have to perform a cutting motion as opposed to a downward.
Right.
So, like, a cut instead of like an
axe. Right, exactly. Okay. Exactly, and that's why there's certain restrictions about requirements for the length of the knife. That when you slaughter, it's supposed to be double the length of the width of the neck, so that you know that when you were sliding it across, you weren't doing any straight downward motions. Although technically, technically, there's no shear for the width of the knife as long as you go back and forth, but the minhag is to require that the knife has to be twice the width of the neck, so that if you go...
Isn't that really thick?
Really long.
Yeah, it's really long. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you for shechting animals, it's like this wide.
Yeah. That
knife
long?
It's very long. Yeah, very, very long knife. A very, very long knife. So that the idea is, because if you cut it, if you do the shechita in one motion, so even if you do the shechita in one motion, you know that it's still possible that you did a sliding across as opposed to a... as opposed to a straight down, where if you have a very short knife and you have a big neck of an animal and you have, lo and behold, you did the shechita in one stroke, that means obviously you went down as opposed to across. Mm-hmm. Okay?
So can you... What? You can always use a bigger knife. You just can't use a smaller knife.
Well, no, that's not.
Chicken?
You could technically, but the minhag would not be to do that because then the knife is too heavy and the neck of the chicken is so scrawny. Then there's more of a chance if the knife is too big that you're gonna press down instead of going across.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
Technically, if you have the chicken over here and you have this gigantic knife over here and you go like this, but if you're on a downward angle at all, the pressure of the knife could go like that as opposed to totally being controlled by your back and forth movements. Yeah. Chaloda, another psul shchita, is if the knife is hidden. If it's under the... If you go inside the neck, if you jab the knife inside the neck and you shecht the animal while the knife is inside the neck, or even if you stick it in like fur. If there's fur on the neck over here or feathers on the chicken and you go underneath it, if you go underneath the feathers, then that is also unacceptable. The knife has to be completely uncovered during the shechita.
You mean the top of the, blade has to be visible. It can't be...
Right. The blade has to be visible the entire time.
But the entire blade can't be visible, otherwise you're not cutting
anything. No, it just can't be obscured on the top by anything. Either by fur or by skin or by flesh, whatever.
In other words, if you have like a really, really shaggy animal...
Right, then you have to...
You have to cut the hair or something, or make sure.
Exactly.
Like the woolly mammoth wouldn't work.
Right, for other reasons, yes. But the... And then hagrama, which is that you shecht at an improper place, that has to be between... It has to, basically, you have the entire neck, but as soon as you get to the... I don't know what it's called in English. Cova, epiglottis, maybe, of the animal, then that's a problem, and when it's too far down... But if you go in right in the middle of the neck of the trachea and the esophagus, then you're good. So ikor, and then there's another psul called ikor, which is when you're shechting. So either the trachea or the esophagus, which are the two things you're supposed to cut, comes out of place. It gets completely detached from the top of the, it gets pulled out of its the way where it's supposed to be attached in the jaw. Then that would also be unacceptable. That's one of the opinions in the Rishonim. Another opinion in the Rishonim is that this ikor is when a knife has a nick in it. Some people hold that that's a separate halacha, that it's just simply not shechita if the knife has a neck in it, but according to some opinions, ikor, the snapping the trachea and the esophagus, is not if they come out of place, but rather it's if the knife has a nick in it. So any of those things will invalidate the shechita and the animal being avela, even if you tried to perform a valid shechita, but you were unsuccessful, so too bad, so the animal is in the vela. Also, the person who's performing the shechita has to be a good Jewish person. That if the person performing the shechita, the Mishnah says in Chulin that shechita is hanochri nevela, that if a non-Jew performs a shechita, then it is absolutely a nevela.
The same with a Jew who's not.
Well, you're right.
All the mitzvahs?
Right. Not all the mitzvahs, but certain types of Jews. If a Jew is mechal Shabbos publicly, so probably desecrate Shabbos, and that would not be kosher to be a shochet. It's this whole discussion, Masech Eschulin over there, exactly how not firm the person has to be in order to really invalidate their shechita. But if you worship Avodah Zarah, you violate Shabbos publicly, then dino kegoy. The Rambam has a very interesting lesson. That's a very famous Rambam, where he says that shechita sanachri is nevela, that shechita of a non-Jew, he brings a different pasuk to prove it than most other people bring, but he says... Right, because he says most people bring that it's v'zavachta v'achalta, that the Torah says that you slaughter and then you should eat. So that means somebody who's obligated to eat only kosher meat has to be the one who's slaughtering. So it's in sort of an automatic psul, since a non-Jew is not has no relationship between the non-Jew and the whole idea of eating kosher. Right, right. So obviously, the Shechita doesn't work. It has to be a person who's relevant shayach to the parsha of Shechita. But the Rambam says that the reason is, the Torah, the pasuk in the Torah that we derive this from is, v'kara lecha v'achalta mizivcho, that one of the reasons that we're not allowed to associate too much and intermarry with non-Jews is that they might call us and we might eat from their slaughter. Really talking about sacrifices, but the Rambam brings it as regarding this as well.
It's the other way around. They're not supposed to eat their food, so we don't end up marrying their daughters, huh?
That's the Rabbanan. That's the Rabbanan. But this is the Daraisa thing. Right, so we're not supposed to eat their Shechita so that we don't go worship their gods eventually. So the Rambam says, after he says this, Shechita is anachrin avela because of this pasuk. He says, v'geder godol godru badavar, and they made a very great fence about this idea, and even the Shechita of a non-Jew who doesn't worship Avodah Zarah is a nevela. So the commentators go crazy over here, but what it seems to say is that the Rambam holds that this Psul Shechita has to do with Avodah Zarah, has to do with there's a non-Jew who doesn't worship Avodah Zarah, certainly a Ger Toshav, a non-Jew accepts the seven Noahide mitzvos, and he lives in Eretz Yisrael, and we're all happy with him, etc., but even according to Rambam, maybe even a Muslim, the Shechita would not be Psul Midaraisa, but would be only possible to meet the Rabbanan, it sounds like. It's hard to even say such a thing, but it's strange. So some people reinterpret the Rambam. No, what he really means is that it's a Daraisa Geder, it's a fence around this, but it's very strange. But according to the vast majority of Rishonim, this is pretty much a unique opinion of the Rambam, not really people don't agree with him, that according to the simple understanding of the Mishnah even, and according to the vast majority of Poskim, any non-Jew who performs a Shechita, is absolutely a nevela midaraisa. There's no way of getting around that. But again, for shochtim, we try to take, again, certainly if there are, it's also a discussion as to if you can believe someone who doesn't eat kosher, and how if somebody specifically does not eat kosher even when kosher is available, so the shechita is also no good. And if somebody eats kosher when available, but if they really have a hankering for meat and they can't get any kosher meat, so maybe the Shechita is good. It's a whole discussion. But nowadays we try to get very pious people to be shochtim. We don't go with any of these leniencies. We try to make sure that people are really from.
Make sure.
That's an excellent question. That's an excellent question. That was a major subject of the Zerima. This whole in the Sri De'esh, the Tshuva Sri De'esh, by Rabbi Weinberg. Not our Rabbi Weinberg, but the Rabbi Weinberg who lived in, who was the head of the rabbinical seminary in Berlin before the war. After the war, he lived in Montreux, Switzerland. So he has a whole exchange with all different rabbis about why it should be the case. They bring different reasons. I haven't gone through all the tshuvas personally, but the consensus is that it's certainly not to be allowed, which is why there is no Shechita in Switzerland. Because one of the requirements in Switzerland for the animals have to be stunned before Shechita. So the kosher, they're from France. The Swiss shochtim go to France, the shecht, which is not that far.
At least they, but they let it in the country.
Yeah.
They let it in the country.
Yes, they let it in the country, but the Shechita cannot take place in Switzerland. Fine. Kamosha Amru Zichron Livracha, B'chulin, as it says in Maseches Chulin, that anything where the shechita was invalidated itself, then it's a nevela. That if the shechita was a correct shechita, but there's something else, a bodily defect that causes the animal not to be able to be consumed, so that was a treifa. Reb Chaim has a shtickel Torah, famous Reb Chaim Brisker, that his conceptual analysis of treifa is that it lessens the efficacy of the shechita. This won't be tameh, it won't be an avela, but he says the treifa, the reason, the conceptual analysis behind the halachos of treifas is that it lessens the efficacy of the shechita. So we say in Hebrew, it's a chisaron in the heter shechita. The shechita can't fully permit the animal if it has the defects in its body, but nevertheless, it does not become a treifa if this is the case. There are certain things where it's certain major defects that an animal has, which is called a nevela mechayim, that it has no, as a nevela while it's still alive, and it cannot even become tahor when it's shechted. So for example, if its leg, and the whole place where the leg was attached to the body is removed, So that is that's also, or if it had if its spine was broken by the back of the neck. So these types of things, these major defects cannot will rend, even a shlita will not help from the animal from not being mitame when it dies, but it has to be dead. Well, it can't, it's not going to be tame while it's still alive. And that's also something that we should have pointed out last week, that by the tumas ochlim, we're talking about the ritual impurity associated with foods. So an animal cannot contract tumas ochlim until it actually dies.
Which means that milk from an animal that has some kind of...
No, the animal flesh itself. Milk wouldn't be a separate category. Yeah, milk would, could have tumas ochlim anyway. Because of the mashke, because milk is one of the seven mashkim. According to some, right, but according to some, it's a machlokes, but if other mashkim can receive tuma or not, some hold that even, that it's only these seven mashkim that can even receive tuma, whereas others hold that any liquids can receive tuma if they're edible. It's only that these seven liquids can cause other things to receive tuma when they come into contact with it. And then there was what's called the hechsher to be to accept tuma. So if you shecht the pig, it's still going to be a nevela when you shecht it, because the shechita is irrelevant for a an animal like this, a non-kosher animal. However these animals die, they're going to be nevela. So mikol makom ein matam muslahein velo atahoros ad shiamusu legamrei velo bod shemafarkesos. So something does not have the tumas nevela, does not have the ritual impurity of a nevela, unless it actually dies. So you might say, well, once it's been shechted, it's as good as dead. But that's not true, as even while it's still convulsing, it does not have the tumas nevela until it actually expires and its soul leaves it, for to the extent that soul, the animals have souls, whatever that means. So all of these halachos are explained in the Seder Taharos, in the order of Taharos of the Mishnah, uvrov b'maseches kelim uv'maseches Taharos, mostly in the tractate kelim and in the tractate Taharos, which is in the Seder Taharos. It's not one masechta devoted to nevela per se, but its details of the nevela are found all throughout the Seder of the Mishnah and Tosefta.